Good morning, everybody.
Good morning.
So I have the great pleasure this morning of introducing Dr. Andrea Davis, our guest speaker for today. So Andrea is the chair of Department of Humanities at York University. I'm breathless. I was running after my son. Okay. She's also an associate professor and board member of the Harriet Tubman Institute, and also former deputy director of the Center for Research on Latin American and the Caribbean. However, that is what Andrea is written on paper. To me, Andrea is a very good friend. She is a former parishioner at this church before she moved to Newmarket, and she's also Carter's godmother, one of. So I'm very pleased today to introduce Dr. Andrea Davis.
Thank you so much, Reverend Leader and Clavel, for the invitation to join you in your service as we celebrate Black History Month. I am going to be engaging in what may be a difficult conversation about things we don't usually talk about in church, but I ask you to be patient with me, and I hope that somewhere in all of this there will be a word for you. I've titled my talk, Whose History, Whose Truth? As I reflect briefly on the histories of people of African descent in Canada and the Americas, I'm inviting us to consider the facts of history, which for people of African descent are marked primarily by enslavement, brutalization, and loss. And I'm asking us to consider these facts of history against the promises of God's truth. As a university educator, I teach a large first-year course. Each year, I get about 200 students. And these students are asked to read, often for the first time, slave narratives and other intimate records of chattel slavery. For many of them, their initial response is anger or sadness and hopelessness. For those students who are Christians, they're also deeply conflicted by the role of the church in transatlantic slavery and the use of the Bible to justify enslavement. And they struggle with balancing their knowledge of the past and the clear need for a better reality for Black people with the idea of an impartial God. In other words, they struggle to balance what they are offered as a non-racial Christian theology with a world that is clearly racial, racialized, and even racist. In attempting to think through this dichotomy or conflict, I'm asking us to consider the difference between fact and truth. Fact, which comes from the Latin word factum, means an action or a thing done or made. It is an indisputable event, experience, or thing that can be proven by empirical research and quantifiable measures, for example, chattel slavery, that definitively occurred. But facts are only part of what is true. Facts are malleable, depending on how we remember or perceive them, and they can be taken out of context. I'll give you one example. Last week, Gail King, a broadcast journalist for CBC, did an interview with WNBA star Lisa Leslie about the NBA superstar Kobe Bryant, who had passed away a week earlier. One small clip of that interview in which King asked Lisa Leslie about the charges that had been brought against Bryant more than 15 years ago circulated widely, resulted in harsh criticism and even death threats against the journalist. That clip is a fact. It exists, and she did ask that question. But by itself, it is not a true reflection of the interview. Truth, then, is not about individual facts, or it's more than about individual facts. It's about meaning. Truth helps us to interpret and understand the facts. And it's also a biblical concept. In John 14, verse 6, Jesus says to Thomas, one of his disciples, "I am the way, the truth, and the life. No man comes to the Father but by me." Today I want us to consider two facts: the fact of chattel slavery and what my colleagues in the humanities call the afterlife of slavery. The afterlife of slavery is a shadow of enslavement that continues to mark Black life as a deficit and even as expendable in the present. So here are the facts. Chattel slavery was practiced all across the Americas. At least 12 million enslaved Africans were transported across the Atlantic and sold in the Caribbean, the United States, Canada, and South and Central America from the 16th to the 19th century. These numbers do not include the millions of others who died during the Middle Passage at sea. In designating the enslaved as property or chattel, and therefore not human, the system of slavery in the Americas constructed Black people as savage and uncivilized. It separated them permanently from their families, stripped them of their names, languages, and cultures, and designated those cultures as embodying all things dangerous, deviant, and evil. The construction of Blackness as dangerous and evil, in turn, justified the use of exceptional violence against Black people during slavery and many, many years after. Again, here is a fact. It is a fact that Africans participated in the sale of other Africans for profit. And it is also a fact that many slaveholders were Christians. According to Yolanda Pierce, the dean of the Divinity School at Howard University, Christianity was in fact pro-slavery. And I quote from her, she says, "So much of early American Christian identity is predicated on a pro-slavery theology, from the naming of the slave ships, to who sponsored some of these journeys, including some churches, to the fact that so much of early American religious rhetoric is deeply intertwined with slaveholding. These are all facts, undeniable, brutal, and harsh. For Black people who live in the Americas today, our lives are marked by this history. Black families are disproportionately poor. Black boys and men are criminalized, experience over-surveillance by the police, and are judged more harshly by the justice system. The educational system fails Black children. Black women die at higher rates from preventable disease. These are all facts, and this is what it means to live in the afterlife of slavery. Within this context, resistance is a radical and necessary assertion of Black life. It means to speak both to and against the history of enslavement, to lay claim to the right to belong in the present, and to continue the struggle and to dream for a better tomorrow. This kind of resistance and daily struggle to achieve the basic tenets of human rights, however, takes hard, hard work. And so today, I ask the question, where in the midst of this do we find God's truth? The truth is that those of us who love God and trust God must accept that we are not bound by the traumatic past. Transatlantic slavery is a historical fact, but it doesn't define who I am. In Romans 8, verses 15 to 17, God's word says, "I'm not a servant and I'm not in bondage. I am a child of God. For ye have not received the spirit of bondage again to fear, but ye have received the spirit of adoption whereby we cry, Abba, Father. The Spirit itself beareth witness with our spirit that we are the children of God. And if children, then heirs, heirs of God and joint heirs with Christ. 1 Peter 2, verse 9 says further that I belong to a chosen race. You are a chosen generation, a royal priesthood, a holy nation, a peculiar people. Again, in our reading today in 1 Corinthians 2 and verse 12, we are reminded that we have received not the spirit of the world, but the spirit which is of God, that we might know the things that are freely given to us of God. If we believe that we are the called of the Lord, then we must accept that while we are in the world, here's the fact, we are not of the world, here's the truth. We operate by a different set of principles. If I'm a child of God, then he has a responsibility to love, provide for, care for, and protect me. The truth is that slavery, poverty, and inequality are all inconsistent with God's truth. The slave Bible that was produced in England in the early 19th century, which was used to justify slavery and manage the enslaved, omitted 90% of the Old Testament and half of the New Testament. This severely condensed version of the Bible contained a few carefully chosen facts, but it was not God's truth. That's the only way the Bible could have been used to justify slavery. Yes, we will and we do experience hurt, failed relationships, broken promises, the loss of a loved one, racist acts by coworkers or neighbors, or even complete strangers, but none of these things change who God is. In Isaiah 43, verses 18 to 19, God asks us to turn away from the pain of the past and to behold a new thing. I've personally been walking through an incredibly difficult season, but when the facts in front of me are overwhelming, I can still reach for a higher truth, that God has promised to undo the heavy burdens, to let the oppressed go free, and to break every yoke. Some of us are oppressed because we are women. Some of us are oppressed because we are racialized. Some of us are oppressed because we're poor. And all of us experience pain and hurt and loss because we're human and Adam failed. But God's love, mercy, and salvation through Jesus Christ covers all our needs. In John 10 and verse 10, Jesus says that he has come that we might have life and that we might have life more abundantly. This principle of life abundantly is demonstrated powerfully in Luke 6, where Jesus reveals his heart and the plan of a new humanity. To those who are poor, who are hungry, who weep, and are social outcasts, he knows and feels that pain and hurt and promises restoration and deliverance and comfort. Those of us who seek to follow him must practice the same spirit of empathy. We must walk ethically in the world, aware not only of our own needs or our own oppressions, but the ways in which those oppressions may intersect with the hurt of others. We are called to be the light that shines before men, that they may see our works and glorify our Father who is in heaven. In closing, then, I return to my earlier question. Where is God in the midst of the fact of an ungodly world? The truth is, he's in us, and we're his light. When nothing else makes sense, let us focus on this simplest of truths, that Jesus is the way, the truth, and the life, and let us love God with all our heart, with all our soul and mind, and love our neighbors as ourselves. Thank you. Thank you.